Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop on this Food Friday, May 31st. Here it is, the end of May. I'm Ray Graff. Food Friday faves Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough are back. They've written 37 cookbooks at last check and sold well over a million of them. They're favorites here on the show. We'll talk about what they're up to. And frankly, I've never known them to let grass grow under their feet. So we'll find out what they're up to. Of course, if you have a food question, they'll give it the best shot. Number to call here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551, or email us, voxpop@wamc.org as we get rolling here, voxpop@wamc.org, or 800-348-2551. Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough and your calls on Food Friday right after the news. Hello again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's Food Friday, and today we welcome back our friends Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough. They produce a popular podcast, Cooking with Bruce and Mark. They write, I don't know, they've done 36 cookbooks and counting. In fact, these guys have written more words about air fryers than anyone in the history of the humankind. I believe. It's just a guess, but I'll stick with it. If you have a cooking or recipe question, these guys are pretty smart. Give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number. 800-348-2551. Or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. That's voxpop@wamc.org. I'm checking the email bag as we speak. 800-348-2551 is the number. Bruce Weinstein, Mark Scarborough, welcome back, fellas. How are you?
Good. How are you, Ray?
Hey, Ray.
You know, I like when we start the show before it begins, during the news, talking about mayonnaise. And frankly, I'm amazed because...
We were talking about mayonnaise.
So my friend John Fisher from the Culinary Institute hepped me to the Duke's mayonnaise, which in my household, it was like the Holy Grail showed up in a UPS box.
It's hard to find up here, but it's very smooth. I like the texture.
I thought you didn't like it that much.
No, I said I liked it. It's just not, I didn't understand the big hype.
You like Hellman's just as much.
I don't know that there's that much of a difference, but okay.
It's all in the mind then. Now,
I'm trying to be nice.
Whoa. That's all right.
Your friend gave you something good. I'm trying to say something nice about it.
Listen, of us, I'm the one raised in the South.
Right.
Excuse me. Reared in the South.
That's right. Yeah, buddy. You reared in the South.
I was reared. Plants are raised. Humans are reared. So I was reared in the South. And, you know, Duke's is I don't know what. It's a faith statement. It's a religion.
It's awesome. It's great. But, I mean, I'm taking everything henceforth that Bruce says with a grain of salt.
Okay.
Because he likes the avocado mayonnaise.
Well,
you didn't like it.
Thought it was okay.
All right, so you're
the avocado
off the
oil.
List.
But here's the question.
At least neither of us likes Miracle Whip. So.
But see, that's it in the South. What's so more popular, Miracle Whip or Duke's?
Is Miracle Whip a Southern thing? That's Kraft, right?
Yeah, it's sweet. It's basically mayonnaise candy.
My grandmother loved Miracle Whip.
Yeah, mine did too.
We grew up with that stuff.
Mine did too.
Did you just eat Miracle Whip sandwiches?
Well, we didn't go that far.
In fact, my grandmother would mix sugar into jarred Hellman's mayonnaise.
To make her own Miracle Whip.
Yeah,
just to give everybody in the family the diabetes.
Yes, with the definite article.
The diabetes.
The diabetes.
Yes.
Hey, how is the podcast going?
Podcast is great. We do it weekly, and there are three segments in each episode. And the first segment is our one-minute cooking tip, which usually takes about 4 or 5 minutes to get
through. That's not fair.
Yeah, but we don't have sponsors.
But
so,
in fairness, we have an academic minute here on the station, 2.5 minutes. So figure. So
yeah,
that's just the way, you know, there's the way it goes.
It's really great because it makes me think about things that I do every day in the kitchen that I just want to share. And it's like one of my favorites on last week's episode was all about cooking bacon. And you know, Ray, when you cook meat, you get your pans really, really, really hot first, not with bacon. It is one of the few meat products you put in a cold pan, and then you put it on a medium flame.
Why?
Because as it heats up, it'll slowly start to melt the lard out of that, the pork fat, and then you'll have a nice layer of fat to start bubbling the bacon in, and it cooks crispy. It'll start to burn before the fat comes out if you do it in a hot pan.
Now, let me ask you, and I'm sure this didn't come up in the 1 minute that you had, or three, or whatever it turned out to be.
7 minutes, 10 minutes.
Preference. Do you guys like crispy bacon? My son, it's weird. Like, we all like crispy bacon. Mm-hmm. He doesn't like it that
crispy. I like floppy bacon.
Now, yeah, he likes that too.
As we refer to it as flaccid bacon.
That's very nice. My son does not refer to it as that.
Well, you can refer to it as that for him from
now on. No, I like it. I don't like. I used to have a great aunt who would make bacon such that you could nail nails in with it. I mean, it was so hard and overdone. I don't like it that far, but I do want it crispy.
I'm with you on that.
Well, I want it crispy, but still floppy.
No.
You could do both.
How could you? What is it, like a McDLT? How do you do that?
It's like an undecided voter. Right. It doesn't exist.
Independent bacon. All right, give me some other topics that you guys have done on the one-minute cooking.
Ray, when you buy potatoes, what do you do with them when you get them home?
Give them to my wife.
Okay, when your wife buys potatoes, what does she do with them when she gets them home?
I'm not allowed in the kitchen. Seriously, okay. I don't know.
Never store them on the counter or anywhere where you can just see them.
Why?
Because when light hits a potato, it gets green. Mark, why does that happen?
No, you're setting this whole thing up as a quiz show. You say why it happens.
Well, because it's like
Mark Scarborough for 10.
Because chlorophyll develops in the potato skin and it turns green, and it's unsightly. And if you eat too much of that green stuff, you will get an upset stomach.
Really?
I mean, just think about it. When you walk into a supermarket, the potatoes are stored at room temperature. That's because potatoes actually don't do well in cold environments, in cold storage environments. So you want to store your potatoes at home in a dark space. You want to store them away from onions. Onions make them sprout. You want to store them like in a bag in your pantry. And of course, this means they can't keep forever. They'll desiccate. So room temperature at the store, they keep them at room temperature, and at night they throw a covering over them.
They throw blankets on the potatoes.
Oh, come on.
They do, because they keep their lights on all night, and those fluorescent lights will turn the potatoes green.
Who amongst us was a spokesperson for the U.S. Potato Board?
You were? You worked for the potato. Guys worked for the potato board.
We did, years ago. And let me tell you, there is a difference between the U.S. Potato Board, the National Potato Board, and the Idaho Potato Board.
And they don't speak.
And they don't speak to each other. In fact, they hate each other.
Oh, there's a rivalry. Oh, that's amazing. Hey, this is my turf. See,
The U.S. Potato Board was the one that sponsored the Mr. Potato Head in the Macy's Day Parade about 15 years ago.
Correct. That's right.
So is this going to be in the next book?
No. When I'm done with the entire profession, it can be in the bitter memoir.
They also had a Swarovski crystal encrusted potato that had to travel under an armed guard that year that the potato head was
true. Let me ask you a question. Have you guys been smoking opium in the green room before the show?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough are here today. What is the new book? I understand it's going to hit the shelves soon.
In a year. We just turned it in. It's a big book, 425 recipes. It is called Cold Canning. It is 425 small batch recipes for jams, jellies, chutneys, chili crisps, salsas, matchas, krauts, infused.
Triple sec. Triple sec,
basil
oil. Anything that's kind of infused or made from blackberry jam to hazelnut liqueur.
Really?
And none of it involves a pressure or a steam canner.
No processing.
Right.
Okay, hold it.
Yeah,
stop.
No processing.
Stop. When you write books, you have endless contraptions on the counter, presumably.
Presumably.
And this time, you didn't need any
Nothing. Of that. Nothing. All you need is a jar, you put the strawberry jam in it, and you put it in the refrigerator or the freezer.
Or the freezer.
There's no need to have to process seal them if you're not shelf-stable storing them.
Interesting.
This book isn't out for a year yet, but what we love about it is that when you see, let's say, strawberries on sale at a big box store, even at your local supermarket, right, you could actually buy a couple containers of strawberries and make, two jars of jam?
Yeah.
And then you made strawberry jam without, again, surviving the apocalypse.
Well, and we had a nice chat about the apocalypse before the show as well, which we won't go into right now. But when you make this jam in that way, does it have the same consistency? Is it thick and good and everything?
Yep. All you're doing is not processing it. And in fact, so you cook your jam on the stove the way you normally would, put it in the bottle, and by saving it that way without processing it, it's actually not overcooked. When you process those bottles to make them shelf stable, you're cooking them even longer.
You're double cooking them.
And you're double cooking them. This way, you're not double cooking them. They taste fresher.
Right.
And you're only making one or two jars, which is all anybody really wants anyway.
Right. And so we have sauerkrauts and kimchis. I mean, basically things that you would normally think of canning, as well as homemade triple sec and homemade French elegant.
And homemade ketchup.
By the way, kimchi. Are either you on board with this?
I love kimchi.
Really? I'm a nut with kimchi.
Oh, God, it's almighty. So yummy.
Okay, so the best hamburger, blood red Duke's mayonnaise kimchi.
Kimchi on the top.
That's the best.
I got a couple daughters who are way into the kimchi, but I'll buy some, and then they only go through about a third of it, expensive.
It is expensive.
But it lasts forever.
Does it really?
Yeah. I mean, it's fermented. It's a fermented food.
And
it doesn't last forever, but it should last six months.
Bruce makes kimchi for us every summer without buying it. It's part of the in the book. And so he makes kimchi every summer. And last summer, he made a giant, I mean, like a, what am I saying, 5-gallon drum.
It was a 5-gallon paint tub worth.
Of refrigerator kimchi. And, you know, we ate it. And then we kind of forgot about it.
Yeah.
Then we opened it, and it smelled kind of like a landfill.
Yeah, how much Maalox did you have to go through?
We threw it out. Let's just say we threw it out.
Let's take a quick break. 800-348-2551 is our number. It's Food Friday with Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough. Their new book is about making jelly a new fashion way, and we'll talk more about that. We'll also get some more one-minute cooking tips and any question you happen to have. We'll be back. Vox Pop, Ray Graff with you. It's Food Friday, and Mark Scarborough and Bruce Weinstein are with us today. 800-348-2551 is the number. The email is voxpop@wamc.org. Kathy in Clintondale writes in, Duke's is the best. When traveling to Florida in our camper van each winter, we discovered Duke's Mayo and is the best. And it comes right to your door if you order it online. And that's what I did. And it came yesterday.
It was
Christmas Day.
I am telling you, it's kind of how you know you're a Southerner. It's Duke's mayonnaise. There's other ways too, but we won't talk about those
ones.
Right. But
that's good.
I want to give you a tip here, Ray.
Okay.
So during the break, you were talking about bourbon.
Yeah.
And how you like really good bourbon.
Yes, I do.
So I want to tell you my easy tip for ice cubes.
Okay, can I just stop?
Why?
Why are you talking about ice and bourbon in the same sentence?
See, Mark doesn't think it should ever be put over ice.
Can I just stop the show here for 1 minute? We have a fun drive coming up, right?
Yeah,
right.
And so it starts June 10th on the air, and we're doing the lockbox section. Yep. So anybody who wants to pledge online, go to WAMC.org. It'll really help us shorten the drive. We go wall to wall, June 10th until it ends. And so anything you do now at WAMC.org shortens that drive. So you guys know that I'm an amiable sort and very positive in outlook. And,
happy guy.
Yeah. By the premise, right?
Sure.
So they call me Uncle Grumpy. They have for decades. And so there's this Uncle Grumpy package. Everybody knows I like a good bourbon, and so these are WAMC Rocks glasses, and you were on ice cubes. The other thing is this molded, I think it's stainless steel, ice cube WAMC logo embedded in it.
And you freeze these, and that way you put them in your drink, and it chills your drink without watering it down.
Yes.
But if you want to make ice, if you live in a city, and most people listening probably live in a city, your water is going to be town water, and it's going to be chlorinated.
Yeah.
Why would you make ice cubes out of pool water to put into your very expensive bourbon? Buy yourself some ice cube trays, even if you have an automatic ice maker in your refrigerator freezer.
Oh, which I don't.
And you pour some lovely spring water into your ice cube trays put lovely ice into your bourbon and not chlorinated pool water.
Here's another idea.
Yeah.
Don't put any ice in it.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But,
you know what? I'm with you. A drop or two of good spring water opens the flavors up of any good brown whiskey.
It does.
So, yeah, I'm with you.
But I'm sort of on the tall, give me lots of seltzer and ice and a little bit of booze.
All right.
I like the way this conversation is now going.
Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough are here. They have a new book next year that is coming out. It now went to the publishers and
it's turned in. The photos
two
are done.
Two reams of paper
to print it out.
And what happens after that?
1,000 pages.
Like, do they go through it with a fine tooth comb?
Well, yeah. In the modern publishing, editors don't act the way I don't know Malcolm Cowley and Bennett Cerf act.
Yeah.
They don't blue line anymore. That's the copy editors. So it goes to our publisher, and he'll deal with it and see what he thinks about it and send it back with some queries. And then when I agree to those questions or disagree with them, then it'll go off to the copy editor, and that's where all the blue lining
stuff. What if you disagree? What happens? Who gets the final say?
I do.
Really?
We do. We do. We're the authors of the book.
I'm so glad you turned that into a we.
Bruce is the chef. And so basically at this point in the process, he's cut out of what happens. Unless he says, you know, like, you can't include this. And then I'll go to say, Bruce, help me. Or if it's a really big thing, then you, of course, call the agent and get mom involved. And then mom takes care of it.
Really?
Well,
has it come to that?
Well, yeah. Sometimes.
Many times.
Not with our current publisher, but in past, we've had publishers. When we'd written our 21st cookbook, I had a publisher actually tell me I didn't know the first thing about cookbooks. I thought, I think let's stick mom on the phone.
Okay.
On the phone.
That's a former publisher. By the way, Joanne in Westmere wrote in, as a charter member of the Mayonnaise is Disgusting Club, I'm hoping the discussion moves on to other topics. Well, Joanne, mission accomplished. Hopefully not, but you brought it up again, so I don't know.
Joanne, I belonged to that club for the longest time. I wouldn't eat anything that even looked like it might have mayonnaise in it.
Bad, wrong,
do it.
Wrong.
We couldn't do it.
Wrong.
And now I'll eat mayonnaise if it's mixed. See, she got us back on it. If it's mixed into things, no problem.
All right, Joanne, close your ears for a minute. The Duke's is so good that I would gladly have a bowl of it.
Oh,
yeah,
no,
there you go. Yeah,
no.
Barb, the screener, doesn't even like that.
Mayonnaise is not pudding.
No,
Ray.
That's what I called it.
Pudding.
People didn't like it when I said that.
Okay, so let's get off mayonnaise and talk about whipped cream, which is similar to mayonnaise.
It looks like mayonnaise.
Yeah, but don't put it on your bologna sandwich.
No, which, the mayonnaise or the whipped cream?
The whipped cream.
Oh,
don't do that.
Okay, so. You know, here's a one-minute cooking tip for you. If you want to make better whipped cream, if you're making it not in and out of the can, but you're making it.
Yeah.
Don't you love the way I turned that into a verb?
Yeah, and Zach the engineer really liked that sound.
I know,
so,
they love it.
Good job. Thanks.
Thanks. So if you're making it yourself, the best whipped cream is made with cold utensils. So put the bowl and put the whisk or the beaters from your mixer in the fridge, because what you want to do is keep it cold, and that way you get the smoothest whipped cream without a ton of air, so it's really foamy. You get
this denser
texture.
I never knew that.
Yeah.
See? The things you learn when we visit.
I've never made whipped cream.
Well, have you ever made anything that you've found a recipe online for?
No.
Well, online recipes can be fabulous, and they can be not so fabulous. So if you're picking a recipe online and you're not sure, read people's comments about it. That
definitely
is so important.
That's so smart. Now, these are all tips that your one-minute cooking tips that are part of your Cooking with Bruce and Mark podcast.
All of these have been part of our one-minute cooking tips over the years.
Right.
Yeah. I just, so you get a recipe for lemon meringue pie online, and look at the comments. If someone says, that filling was just too sour, that filling was too this, then it gives you an idea of maybe I should go somewhere else, or maybe I know how to tweak this a little bit. But never just trust an online recipe without comments.
We did this. Now, my buddy Rocco, have you been at DeFazio's in Troy?
No.
Okay, it's phenomenal. And Rocco and I go way back. And so his wife makes this Italian wedding cake, and it is the best thing in the whole wide world.
Mm.
And his wife won't give up the secrets, even though we've asked many times. And I finally got out of him the exact types of booze, but not the amount that go in it.
Mm-hmm.
So we looked online. Sure enough, online, there were a ton of people, a lot of threads about how to make it just like DeFazio's.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran a couple by Rocco. He said, no, that's not how you do it. So we tried it. It wasn't quite the same, but it was real good.
Well, see, you gotta listen to what other people are saying about these things.
And, here's since we're talking about booze, here's another great one-minute cooking tip that I think that Bruce says all the time, so I'm going to steal it from him. is that, remember, no amount of fruit juice or no amount of, I don't know, whatever else you're doing, making sugar and eggs, no amount of ingredients can cover the taste of bad booze. You just can't cover it up. If it's going to burn your lungs, it's going to burn your lungs no matter how much orange juice you pour
Even
into it.
Even a frozen strawberry margarita cannot be covered up if you're using bad tequila.
You know what? Okay, so you guys have been on a lot, but these are the smartest things you've ever seen. I'm writing it down.
And you don't have to, and when we say this, you don't have to go to the $80 tequila.
No.
We're just talking about, you know, bumping it up to the $20 tequila.
Just stay away from the $2 tequila.
Right. That nothing's going to fix that.
By the way, where'd you get that $2 tequila? Sherry writes in, quote of the day, mayonnaise is not pudding. So there you go. Thank you, Sherry. Appreciate that.
I love that we have created a universe where the sentence, mayonnaise is not pudding, actually makes sense.
Yes.
So that's a beautiful thing.
Okay. The other tip, taste your ingredients while you're cooking.
Oh.
So you have to taste everything while you're cooking. Don't just like taste your stew while it's going to see if there's enough salt. Taste it as you go. Taste those canned tomatoes when you open them and make sure you're happy with the way they taste before they get dumped in. When you're making pasta, I hate to say it, but you're going to have to taste that, even that boiling pasta water.
How are you going
to
do that?
You blow on it and then you taste it. You want to make sure it's salty enough.
Well, on that point about tasting everything, I think the best $15 you can ever spend if you really want to up your cooking game is, okay, let's say you have discretionary $15, go to the store and buy all the brands of chicken broth, if you use a lot of chicken broth or vegetable broth, that are there, and taste them.
But there's a rather large variety of
right,
chicken broth.
So of the ones that you would pick at the store, pick, let's say, four or five of them. Take them home, and I'm serious, open them and taste them just at room temperature.
Take them like soup.
You will discover which one, and they're not all the same, and they don't all fit my taste, and they're not all going to fit your taste. Some of them are too oniony. Some of them are too salty.
Okay, here's a tip. We just said you have to salt pasta water when you boil it. It makes the pasta taste better.
Yeah.
Instead of salt, use the cubes. Throw the bouillon cubes in your boiling water before the pasta will taste even better because that water is going to then get absorbed into the pasta.
Okay. All right. That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
I can understand that. I love one here on your cooking tip list. Anchovies are a secret ingredient.
Oh, they are.
Rick Orlando was on last week, and he's a great chef, and he made this pasta dish from Sicily. I don't know. I can't say it in Italian. But it had little bits of sardines in that one.
Those
but
are good, too.
Anchovies, same kind of deal.
Well, the thing about anchovies is they're all salt and they're all umami, just that base, earthy, savory flavor bomb.
Yeah.
And you can sauté one with garlic and onions at the bottom of a marinara sauce, the bottom of a bœuf bourguignon, a chicken stew. Nobody's going to know there was an anchovy, and it's not going to taste fishy. It's just going to give a boost of flavor that you would not imagine.
It's funny, if you tell someone, they sometimes will freak out.
Yeah,
Oh, I hate anchovies.
Of course.
Because people who are afraid of that big taste are going to go, no, I won't eat that.
Yeah,
but don't tell them.
And I mean, I'm a guy that doubles the anchovies on pizza, so I love anchovies. But still, nonetheless, you can't taste it in a beef stew. Let's say like a beef lentil stew or a beef and rice stew, turkey rice stew. You can't taste it. It just, as Bruce says, it ups the savory quotient dramatically.
It's like adding MSG. It just makes it taste better. And I am a big fan of adding MSG.
You have it on hand.
I have it on hand. I do a lot of Asian cooking at home, a lot of Sichuan cooking, and I put MSG in lots and lots of stuff.
I love the stuff, too.
Yeah,
I eat it by itself.
on your mayonnaise?
I'll put it in my mayonnaise pudding at some point.
It's like sprinkles. Because it always comes in little crystals. You can sprinkle it on your Duke's
nice
pudding.
Yeah.
Nice. I like that.
All right, so let me do the reestablish here. Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough are here. They have a podcast, Cooking with Bruce and Mark. We're talking about one-minute cooking tips here. And anything else, they've written 37 now cookbooks.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a cooking question, feel free to give us a call, 800-348-2551. You can email us at voxpop@wamc.org. And by the way, Lockbox is open. Feel free. Make that pledge. We'll shorten our drive The on-air drive begins June 10th. Matt writes in with a question about strawberries.
All right.
What's the best way to store and keep them to avoid mold?
Well, in general, the best way to store berries is to, first of all, I wash strawberries, but I don't necessarily wash other berries. But strawberries, I wash them, get that sand and dirt off of them, and then...
Especially local strawberries.
Mm-hmm. And then on paper towels in a bowl. So I line a bowl with paper towels. I put them back in. Lay a damp paper towel over the top and in the refrigerator.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, berries are some kind of shoot because they mold all the time. Well, you know, there's a word that I probably can't use on
okay.
the
Okay. Thank you.
So it's a problem. And they mold
they
so
quickly. You look at them and they mold.
Yeah. I bought some the other day I was out and I bought a thing of blackberries and I opened it this morning and I was like, oh my gosh, they're already moldy. And I've just opened it. It's so frustrating. But strawberries at least have a little better shelf life than blackberries. And Bruce is right. This is kind of the best way to keep them. But just understand that they're not going to stay forever. Mm-hmm. If you want them to stay forever, then, of course, hull them and freeze them. You know, just throw
hull them. What is that?
Hull. Take the
hull, holes?
Hull. Yes, hull. Take the inside out. Take the stem and the...
Or just hollow them out?
Or hull them if you're going to be more culinary.
Bruce and Mark are here. Emilio writes in, pasta water. Tasting pasta water while boiling equals death by crucifixion in Italy. There you go. Thank you, Emilio, for that.
Okay, but pasta water, when you go to drain your salty pasta water, because you're going to drain that pasta in a colander, save back a cup of it. Dip your measuring cup in and save back a cup of your salty, starchy pasta water because you will want that when you're tossing your pasta with your sauce and the sauce is being absorbed and you want to add a little more liquid.
Yeah.
You add that starchy, salty pasta water.
Can you do anything with that pasta water afterwards?
Throw it down the drain.
I mean, can you cook with it? Can you use it? No. Can you drink it? Can you make a cocktail out of it?
A cocktail? Salty pasta water cocktail?
Yeah. Pasta water freeze.
You know what?
Pasta water flip.
There's not enough salty pasta water to cover the taste of
bad booze. You know what? That's another phrase that pays. Let's go to the phones, 800-348-2551. Chris is in Great Barrington. Chris, you're on.
Hi, gentlemen, I appreciate your thoughts and I respect your opinions, but mayonnaise does have uses culinary. And at home, we use it a lot. We'll do it for like takoyaki, which is like the octopus balls, tempura octopus balls.
Love those.
Drizzled on top with like bulldog sauce. Yeah, I'm lazy. I don't make my own with bonito flakes. But it does have applications.
Yeah.
That's it. I appreciate you guys. Hey. And I understand. I do understand the sentiment that it's not the perfect solution to everything. Thank you so much.
I disagree. I think it is the perfect solution. Chris, thank you very much.
In fact, you think it's dessert.
Speaking of that, Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough, have the podcast Cooking with Bruce and Mark, my grandmother used to make, and I think this goes back to the Great War, but she would make chocolate cake with mayonnaise.
Yeah, that was a big cake. Did mine.
Well, and it came out great. It was a little rubbery sometimes. I called it the Goodyear cake at times.
Well, because you're adding the fat, the oil in it, and the eggs. So if you put mayonnaise in a chocolate cake, you don't even need to add eggs. I mean, it's basically there for you. It's a chocolate, sugar, flour, and mayonnaise. Yeah,
it's pretty cool. All right, let's grab another call here before the next break. Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough are our guests today. And we're kind of just all over the map. It's kind of fun. not that it's not fun when you guys are on other times, but this is a little wider, wide range of topics. Bruce Weinstein, Mark Scarborough, 800-348-2551. Mary's in Bearsville. How you doing?
Okay, do you know about solar cookers?
Solar cookers.
I have seen TikTok videos of solar cookers. They're like these metal tubes that you keep out in the sun, and the sun heats them up, and then you have a thing that goes inside of them with the food, and then it comes out all hot and sizzling.
Is that what you mean, Mary?
That's only one design. You can make them yourself. They give you the design free. It takes a half an hour to make something. You can cook chicken and rice without gas, electric, or burning wood. Oh. So it's great against climate crisis, and the food is delicious. Fish takes an hour. Chicken, rice takes 2 hours. Lentils takes 2 hours. Other beans take longer. You can cook bread, cake. Mm. We cooked in front of the UN with people from 60 countries.
Wow.
And people all had, men and women had tears streaming down their faces because they had heard of it, but they'd never tasted it. And they all got tiny tastes because we had so many more people than we expected.
Probably why they were crying.
Solar Cookers International.
Cool. Mary, thank you.
The umbrella is based in California, in Sacramento, but their office is all over the world, and it really is extraordinary.
Well, Mary, they're writing this down. I suspect this will be book number 38.
We got to take a cooker book.
Yeah, why not? Let's take a break, Zach the Engineer. 800-348-2551 is the number. Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough are here. We're just getting started, which is a shame because the show is two-thirds over. But we'll be back anyway. Horace Silver and the group there, Nutville, at 800-348-2551. Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough are our guests on Food Friday. You know, while we're on the topic of solar cooking.
Okay.
You guys have done a lot of books. You've done this and that. Have you ever in your lifetimes seen anyone do that kind of cliche of cooking an egg on the sidewalk in a hut?
I have never seen it.
I have seen it.
Yeah.
Can it be done? Yeah. Well, when I was a kid, I grew up in Texas. When I was a kid, and it would be, you know, 1,000 degrees, and we would be a mile and a half from the sun in the summer in August, we would put a frying pan out. We wouldn't cook it on the sidewalk. We'd put a frying pan, one of mother's old beat-up cast iron pans, out for like an hour or two, and then we would go out, and we thought it takes an hour. Well, I don't know. We'd go play baseball. Then we'd come back, and we'd crack eggs into it, and we thought we were so cool.
I grew up in New York. You're not eating anything that came off the floor.
Okay.
We were the home of the pizza rat, so.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Let's just move on. Bruce Weinstein, Mark Scarborough, our guest today. The podcast is Cooking with Bruce and Mark. Your website is?
It's bruceandmark.com.
That's a great website. A lot of good stuff. And I don't know if I've seen too much of the newsletters lately. You guys are giving that up?
No. Well, because the book went out at 2 reams of paper, the latest book, my life was consumed in that.
Yeah.
So I didn't really have time to write the newsletter.
It's fine.
I'm going to try again. It's coming again.
It's one of the few things that get past the spam filter here at the station. So be patient with yourself. I love this tip.
Nobody learns to cook overnight. And you want to make a cake. You want to make the perfect souffle. You want to make a pie. It's not going to be perfect the first time you do it or even the second time you do it. It takes years. Cooking is a skill like playing the piano or the violin or, you know.
Do you do that?
I do play the piano. So does Mark.
Yeah.
Not the violin, though.
But no. Cooking is not—it's not like in your genes. It's not genetic. So
you have to learn to do it.
You have
practice.
To figure this out. And I think Bruce is right. You have to be patient.
Don't beat yourself up if something didn't come out right.
I don't want to cook. I don't want anything to do with it.
Look, I made a stir fry for dinner the other night that was just awful. And
really,
really
that bad.
I was really disappointed in myself.
What went wrong, man?
I made my own rice noodles and they just weren't great. So,
they were admittedly not your finest hour. I will admit
so
to
even
that.
Doing this professionally for 35 years, there's sometimes it doesn't work out. So be patient with yourself.
Okay.
And as we always say, if you're going to have people over for dinner and let's say a disaster happens, right? You're going to make steaks on the grill and you put the steaks out and you come inside and have a few bourbons and you think, where are those steaks again? And they've been out there for an hour and a half.
You never do that. You stay with them.
Okay.
That's one thing I do know.
Pretend a disaster happens when you have people over. Just always have a dozen eggs in the house. You can always make scrambled eggs,
omelets.
If you say a dinner is just ruined,
right?
All right, fine. Then just make scrambled eggs. You're with your friends.
Break out the bourbon and just cut to the chase.
You're with your friends.
All right, while you're on the top, and we'll get back to the phones in a moment. 800-348-2551. You brought up grilling. All right, now, in my household, we made the switch back to charcoal, I don't know, 8, 9 years ago, 10 years ago.
Right.
And lately, we have been all about the lump charcoal, and I want to get your opinion. You guys gas grillers or what?
I have both. I have gas grill and I have a charcoal grill. When I use the charcoal grill, I only buy hardwood lump charcoal.
It's so good.
First of all, you know it's real wood because there's almost no residue, right? When the fire is done and the next day you go to clean up, there's almost nothing left.
It's beautiful.
So it's not a processed kind of briquette-y thing. And it burns long and it burns hot, and I love it.
See, we have a big family. And so I'm cooking basically shift after shift of meats, okay? And the fact that the lump charcoal stays hot much longer.
It's a great thing.
It's beautiful.
It's not cheap. So we have to say that. I mean, it is a luxury to be able to buy it. But if you can afford it, it's
a good
thing.
If you can afford meat, you can probably, at these days, you can probably afford a little lump charcoal.
Anymore. Bruce, I'm the author. Bruce is the chef, so I don't really cook anything.
Oh.
You know, he's going out of town next week for the week, and I think there'll be a lot of frozen dumplings.
Arby's. Eaten.
And, too bad I live way rural.
Okay.
So, I don't do much of this, but it is interesting to watch when he uses the gas grill and when he uses the charcoal grill. Like, he pulls the charcoal grill out if he thinks the steak is worth it.
The more money I spend on the meat, the more likely I'm going to go to the
charcoal. If it's just
charcoal.
Boneless, skinless chicken breasts, he puts them on the gas grill.
Oh, that's so interesting. Now, let's talk about cut of meat. And then I swear to you, Jim and Troy, you'll be next. What are you going for if you're cooking for four?
What
cut of steak will you
go
for?
So I have four people for dinner. I'm probably going to go buy four strip steaks.
You're going to go New York strip?
I'm going to go New York strips.
Yeah.
If it's just the two of us, then I'll get like what they call the Bistecca Fiorentina, the 2.5-inch T-bone that's two pounds.
Yeah.
And we'll just share that. And basically, I cut the meat off the sides. I eat that, and Mark eats the bone.
Like a dog.
Yeah,
good
of
for
course.
You.
Of course.
You know, for our family, which is seven most of the time, usually we'll marinate London broils.
Oh, I love London
and
broils.
And just for a day. I mean, we will.
Yeah.
And we found this Japanese barbecue sauce, and I forget the name of the stuff, but it is the best. It's got some Japanese stuff, but it's very good.
I have lately been into the yellow barbecue sauce, the mustard barbecue sauces.
Yeah. The Carolina Gold.
Yeah, that's good stuff. All right, let's go back to the phones. 800-348-2551 on a free-form edition of Food Friday with Bruce and Mark. Jim is in Troy. Jim.
Hello.
Hello.
I used to have a lot of trouble cooking grilled cheese sandwiches in my restaurant. I'd put butter on the panini and put the grilled cheese in.
Yep.
If I turned it up too hot, I'd get a nice crust, but the cheese wouldn't melt. If it was too low, the bread would dry out, but I'd get the melted cheese. Finally, someone told me to use mayonnaise on the outside, put butter inside for flavor, because the mayonnaise has a higher smoke point. And boy, it worked like a charm.
It is the absolute secret to skillet grilled or panini press grilled sandwiches is to put the mayonnaise on the outside of the bread, just as you said.
Air fried. Because we have recipes in our air fryer books where I do a grilled cheese by spreading the mayonnaise on the outside of the bread and then putting that sandwich in the air fryer.
Yeah.
And they still come out great. So mayonnaise for the grilled sandwiches is something we've been doing for
Rachel's, for
Ruben's.
It makes them super crunchy.
Jim, thank you very much for the call. Number is 800-348-2551. Heather writes in, I'm wondering how to make my ermine frosting not break on my cakes. I've read the free recipes to a T online. Now, I love that you guys said that free ones are sometimes not right. So I'll let my husband know that it's not me, it's the web. That's from Heather. Okay.
Vindicated.
There you are. Now let's go to Beckett, Mass. And Walter, you're on.
Yeah, hi, guys. Thanks very much for the show. I just wanted to let you know that I appreciate the education and the food tips, but I really appreciate the laughter and the humor. It reminds me that I'm listening to Car Talk. So keep it up, guys.
And thank you very much for that. Appreciate it. 800-348-2551. They set the bar high. We probably don't
Car
have
talk.
Anything funny to say for the rest of the show.
I don't know the first thing about cars, and I would listen to Car Talk. So
yeah.
I don't even know. I barely know where you put the gas in. So
have you ever heard the show I do with Gordon Fricke on the cars? We do it once a month.
Of course.
It's not very funny, but you learn a lot. He knows a lot about stuff.
Well, we can come and make it funny.
All right, well, listen, I'll take a day or two off. You guys can host the show, and then I'm sure it'll be hilarious. Let's go to Colony. Betsy, you're on. Hello, Betsy.
Hello.
Hi, you're on. Go ahead.
Hi. So my family's been making béarnaise for years, and we have a couple of different recipes, one that my mother used for years. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. We feel like we do the right thing, the same thing every time, and there's just, like, doesn't seem to be any reason, like, why, but sometimes it'll thicken, and sometimes it just separates.
You know, sometimes eggs have a way of doing that, and it is really true. Sometimes I'll make a Caesar salad, and for some reason, that egg yolk and the oil will not emulsify into something I want it to be. It's rare, but it happens. And the same thing is will happen with your béarnaise sauce or your hollandaise sauce. You're following everything right, but there's just something wrong with it. I'm going to blame it on the egg. There's some chemistry in that egg. I don't know what that chicken
how about
was
if
eating.
You, I mean, the temperature of the eggs are really important in
perhaps.
Béarnaise sauce, right?
Sure.
You can't use eggs out of the fridge necessarily.
No, you want them to be room temperature. Try that next time,
and,
too.
And flour. Flour is a weird thing, especially in the U.S. where all-purpose flour has various densities. So if you're thickening any sauce with flour.
I don't have a recipe that has any flour in it.
Okay, great. So then that wouldn't be it. My hunch is it's the temperature of the eggs, but I
And also if the melted butter, if you're using melted butter as your fat, if it's a little too hot, it could break it and not let it, you know. So there's temperature's a real crucial thing there.
And if you have an instant read meat thermometer, just for your sake, you can pull it out for this because eggs coagulate and set at about 157, 158 degrees around in there. So what you want to do is get hit real close to that. If you're below that, the eggs won't necessarily coagulate. And if you're above that, they will start to break.
Yes. So you have a safe window, as Mark says, starting in the mid-150s up to the mid-170s. If you let it go too much, you're going to break it.
I prefer the bottom end of it because it's safer. But Bruce says, you know, you can go a little higher than that. But once you hit near 170, you're at a dangerous point then with the sauce. It's going to break.
Okay. And just one comment I wanted to add, that I have absolutely fixed this with mayonnaise.
It is the cure-all, I swear.
Yeah. If you throw some mayonnaise in, the blender with the béarnaise that's all separated, it looks like it came out beautifully.
Well, I'm glad you have a solution.
Isn't it amazing? We've done a whole mayonnaise show here.
I'd like to make it right without the mayonnaise.
Well, but you know what? I'm glad that it works with, and you don't have to tell anyone. That's the thing.
Yeah. Keep it a secret. Well, it's a little late. Betsy, thank you very much for the call. Number here is 800-348-2551. Before we get to the next one, I just see this one here on your list of one-minute cooking tips from your podcast, Cooking with Bruce and Mark. Pick the smallest chicken.
Absolutely.
Why? Why?
Why? Because
just get a pigeon. I mean, they're very small.
The smaller the chicken, we're talking about roasting chicken. So the smaller the chicken, the more evenly it will roast. Those giant 5-pound behemoths, Godzilla chickens that walk in.
Yeah.
Those things don't roast evenly by any stretch of the imagination. You're much better with 2 2.5-pound chickens than 1 5-pound chicken, in my opinion.
It'll be more tender. It'll get
better.
Crisper. It'll,
So why make a bigger chicken? I mean, these
things
take time, right?
Chicken industry. You could bring that up with the chicken lobby.
Yeah. I'm sure that there's a U.S.
Oddly enough, I've not had the chicken lobby
U.S.
on the show.
U.S. Chicken Board, the National Chicken Board, the North Carolina Chicken Board.
Were you a member of that?
No, we were not.
Right. Why don't we go back to the phones before we get sued? Elaine in Sussex, you're on.
Hi there.
Hi. Are you in Essex County or Sussex County?
Sussex.
Okie doke. You go ahead.
Well, since you're talking about like shortcuts and things like that, I think it's really great if you can take big things that you make, like lentil soup with ham or beef bourguignon, or you like pesto and you make a... And put it in plastic baggies that are marked so you don't pull it out of the freezer and go, what's this white thing, you know?
Yeah.
And then the way this all started for me is because my kids, before they left for college, I made them tell me what are the 10 top things that you like that I make. I'm going to show you how to make it. And then how to make enough that you can freeze it so that... When you don't have time, you always have a good, nutritious meal. And now they don't even want to go out to eat. They do. But
I'm glad that they wanted to make it and they didn't say, no, we're just going to come to you and you make it for us. Right. Because that could have been the answer.
I did work in the cooking industry for a long time. But really, like, make breaded cutlets and freeze individually.
Great idea.
We make 100 wontons. I put them in a pizza box because it absorbs the moisture with wax paper and stuff like that. We do Gomki, beef bourguignon, blueberries, how to put them on a sheet pan, freeze them, and then put them in a bag. Yep. And then you could have blueberry pancakes.
Well, you could be on the show too, Elaine. That sounds good.
But I mean, you know, it already cooked ground beef. You can put that in Hamburger Helper. You can make just a ground beef Rao's jar, you know, a Rao's jar of sauce and have spaghetti. You know,
I hear that.
Simple, easy things like that for a kid. Like, I wish there was more in school to teach kids how to survive without fast food.
I like that.
That was my goal.
Well,
I want you to go to college and come back with zits and fat.
I did. I went to college and came back with zits and fat. So there you go. I came back with the freshman 15 and zits.
I saw it myself.
Can I say? What you're talking about is actually a huge trend on TikTok, and the kids are really into quote unquote.
I don't even watch TikTok.
But I'm just telling you, it's Sunday cooking. And what they mean by that is cooking on Sunday for the week.
Wow.
And it's a huge trend. It really seriously is that you make you weekend cook
or
batch cook, and then you freeze it
and
store it in the fridge or freezer. It's a thing.
If you put them in Ziploc bags and they're marked, okay, they lay flat. So you got pesto, you got a sauce, you got taco.
Laying
meat.
Them flat gives you a lot more room.
Hey, Elaine, we got to let you go, but thank you so much for the call. I appreciate it very much. We're almost out of time here. By the way, before we wrap it here, fellas, Heather followed up about the ermine frosting.
Okay.
She was wondering if one of your cookbooks has a recipe for it or some frosting that I can use for piping out decorations.
One of those really smooth, silky frostings. I'm going to say that we don't do those kind of highly decorated cakes. And we have a book called Sheet Cakes and Slab Pies. And there are plenty of frostings in there, but none of them are fancy enough for flower decorating. You're going to need to go to a more specific cake decorating book for that.
Yeah, like Rose Levy Barenbaum's The Cake Bible, which is kind of like the industry standard. A book like that would give you lots of information on exactly. I mean, Rose gets so crazy. She takes the temperature of her cakes, the temperature of her frostings, the whole nine yards.
All right, listen, we only have 45 seconds here, so we'll get all your contact information here. One last one-minute cooking tip that I see here is use a salad spinner. Why?
I love my salad spinner because—
We use a garden weasel.
When I wash my salad, and if I just shake it dry and try and blot it dry, you never get all the water out. You pour the dressing on, you water down the dressing, it's gross. You put your washed greens in a salad spinner. Not only did they get perfectly dry, you could put the cover back on that spinner and store them in there for up to a week without them going bad.
Oh, cut it out.
True.
A week old lettuce?
True. It stays as fresh as day one.
I'm not buying it. But I'm sure it's true.
What do you know? You're a mayonnaise eater.
You eat bowls of mayonnaise pudding.
Do you want to do your contact information? Or do you want me to end the show right now? What's the contact information?
Right, at bruceandmark.com. You can check us out on Facebook, on Twitter, on Instagram. Our TikTok channel is also Cooking with Bruce and Mark. And, that's what
you guys are great. We'll see you soon. Bruce Weinstein, Mark Scarborough, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Ray.
Support comes from Rolling Rock Farm Salt and Seasonings, working to spread peace, love, and happiness with handcrafted in small batches, infused sea salts, pepper, and blends, specializing in black garlic, rollingrocksalt.com. Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, career testing, job strategies, interview preparation, resume and cover letter writing, accepting new clients. Careers in Transition, LLC.com. I'm likely to be a career transition after this program. Also, Via Ravioli, fresh pasta and ravioli mixed, rolled, filled, cut, and boxed in Coxsackie, New York. Plus house-made sauces, lasagna, and Italian groceries via ravioli.com. for information. Thanks again to Bruce Weinstein and Mark Scarborough for being with us today. Thanks for listening. Sorry if we didn't get to your call. We will have these guys back again soon. Maybe when book number 38 comes out, maybe before that. You never know. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Great job this week, Zach. Barb King screened the calls. Remember, the lockbox is open. WAMC.org. We got to fill that sucker so that the fun drive doesn't take 4 weeks. It's WAMC.org. Have a great weekend. We'll see you Monday.